What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant. Fully vaccinated and happy to be back outside most of the time, but we're inside today because it's podcast day. And as always, we got producer Justin by our side, who is still kind of sorting through the rubble of the Mavericks ended season and everything going on in the front office there. But to cheer him up, his football team has Julio Jones, so everything works out. We continue on with our off-season cavalcade of stars. We have been fortunate to have a lot of really great, fun people with us, and that trend continues today with the one and only, the man from Yahoo himself, the FSGA enforcer, the floor slapper supreme, the fantasy judge himself. It is Andy Behrens. I think I screwed some of that up, so if I did, please correct me.
No, I'm just excited to be here. I myself am also a fully vaccinated man, so people are totally safe listening to this podcast.
Awesome. Sweet. You don't need a mask to listen to this podcast, so rejoice. Rejoice, everybody. Got plenty of stuff we want to talk to you about today. I wanted to do a little round of either or because this is when, you know, I mean, this is sort of the silly season of the fantasy offseason where people are sort of creating straw men to knock down and tell us who they would or wouldn't draft. Want to do some hype train and smokescreen because, you know, this is the height of coach speak season as well. And so we'll try to dig through some of those great things. But I want to start, as I have with a lot of my guests, digging into a little bit of draft strategy, just trying to like poke around in your head a little bit and see how you think on draft day. And I guess the first thing is because we see people obviously putting out rankings all the time and news headlines come and people talk about how they feel about things. When you're looking at players and you're ranking players, how often do you shift them around in the offseason? And for you, what moves the needle? What makes you want to change spots for guys?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And there's not a ton of non-injury stuff, I would say, that happens during like OTAs and during camp that is going to get me to move off of a lot of initial positions. But what does do it, you know, so I'll go through and I'll do like an initial round of kind of quick and dirty, sloppy projections in, you know, April, May, right around the draft. And I, you know, I do that in part just for magazine work and I do it in part just to build out some ranks. But then the thing that really gets me changing my actual position ranks is when I start diving into best ball drafts. And I realize that like I might have Josh Jacobs here, but I'm always veering away from Josh Jacobs, right? And then I realize, okay, I got to drop this guy because I'm not like I want my ranks at any given moment to reflect the way I would actually draft. And so I might project it all out one way, but if I'm never taking those ranks into a draft and actually following them, then I know I got to do some work. And so it's like, it's probably in that 6 weeks or so after I come out with the initial projections that I really start shuffling up the ranks based on what I actually do. Like when a clock is ticking down in a draft, you will learn a lot more about how you value players than you will from simply projecting.
You know, I think that's interesting too, because I would love, and I'm sure there's somebody out there who has done these, like do a mock draft where everybody has like 15 seconds, right? And it forces you to sort of work under pressure. And I say this as the guy who I always say my tight end draft strategy, for instance, is either to reach early and pay up for one of those top tier guys or wait until, you know, the end and try to grab a guy with upside. But then in reality, what happens is I get to like the eighth round and the clock is running down and I grab Mike Gesicki and then I feel like, what did I do? Like, why did I do this? So I, you know, you saying that makes me think maybe we all do a mock draft with like 15 seconds on the clock, and it really forces you to let's figure out what we're doing and let's make some quick decisions. And that'll give you an idea, I think, of who you really like versus who you maybe talk yourself into.
Oh, I love it. It's like speed chess. I also kind of like I think I'm scared to do it, but I kind of like the idea of a draft in which you're not allowed any resources whatsoever, right? Like it's a tight clock and we're just sitting here and you've got to remember who's been taken. You've got to remember roughly what the ranks are and you've got nothing in front of you.
Wow. That's
I've never done it. I'm too much of a coward to do it. I like the idea.
Well, here's the thing. I would do it as a mock. Don't ask me to play that league out because then I think I feel differently about it. So you talked about, you know, what you look at in the off season. How much do you pay attention to OTA reports?
Oh yeah, another good question because we have to comment on it all the time, right? But, but to the extent to which I actually, will change my player values and ranks. It's got to be based on something negative, right? Because this is just the time of year when it's just all sunshine everywhere about every player. You know, like every running back looks like a three down guy who's going to catch more passes this year. And every fringy tight end is a breakout candidate. And like all the rookie quarterbacks are really quick studies. They're all picking it up really well. And so like negative information stands out more than anything else, because I expect it to be just all, you know, sunshine, rainbows, unicorns about all players. But, you know, when like if you tell me that Antonio Gibson is still having problems with his toe, that gets my attention. You know, any negative injury information, any negative information about a player is going to interest me. But anything positive is just, that's what we should expect. That's this time of year. That's exactly what we ought to be hearing. We ought to be hearing that J.K. Dobbins is going to catch 50 passes, because like everything is possible in June and July, and then things become impossible once we get into the actual season. So good news goes right past me, and bad news I'm pretty clued in on.
Is that just because of the general pessimistic nature of what we do?
Yeah, we're like, and I started, but you know, my initial ranks, and I haven't really come down on Antonio Gibson that much. I was just trying to come up with a piece of bad news that has been out there, and that's one of them, right? Like I still like him theoretically, but it is worrisome that we're even talking about anything remotely negative about a player when it's May and June. That's a little bit of a concern. So yeah, we spend, you know, months trying to poke holes in all these great plans that we lay out early on. I should also say that if I read that somebody is hashtag best shape of his life, they automatically go up a tier, maybe two tiers.
I was going to say, I mean, like, where do you come down on the, you know, photos of players who obviously have just stepped out of the gym after leg day? I mean, you know, like, where
are we going? When Mike Davis has at least one enormous quad, yeah, that doesn't really do anything for me.
You know, which, by the way, I think last week, either the Bears or Allen Robinson put out a video of him like working out and training in like resistance bands or whatever. And so I waited a week and I went back to look at his ADP, and it didn't shift significantly, but there was a definite upward tick on the trend line after the 1 week after the video. And so I'm starting my own theory that there is an ADP boost when guys put out the workout videos.
I hate to watch a lot of that stuff because it just makes you feel terrible about yourself, right? like I think I had a pretty good quarantine workout routine going on, right? Like I was doing the same sort of prison workouts that a lot of people were. And then you see what Derrick Henry is doing and you're like, oh man.
Derrick Henry's doing like space age workouts. Like I have no idea what some of these guys are doing. It's insane. All right, so that actually is a good transition to hype train or smokescreen, because you talk about the good news, bad news thing that you sort of take into account. But these are stories where coaches maybe say a thing and maybe we buy into it and maybe we don't. The first one, knowing that you are a Bears fan, that is your lot in life, and for that I do offer some condolences. Matt Nagy came out recently and said Andy Dalton is the starter. He's their starting quarterback. That's what they are going with. Are you buying this? Are you drafting accordingly? Are you saying to hell with it and I'm going to just draft Justin Fields anyway?
Well, I'm to answer the last part first. Yes, I'm going to go ahead and draft Justin Fields anyway. I do think, like, I don't think it's a lie when he's talking about week one. I just don't think that Andy Dalton is like the locked in starter for the full season. I think that's pretty ridiculous. And you I like quarterbacks that get drafted as high as Justin Fields was drafted, and when you actually, you know, spend some future draft capital to do it, like he's gonna play. He's gonna play a bunch. The city will riot if he's not playing by October, right? Like that's just gonna happen. Everybody was ready for the Justin Fields era as soon as they made the trade and before they made the pick, right? Like we were ready for Justin Fields to take over. But I also don't think that they want to feed him to the Rams in week one. Mm-hmm. Like the opening schedule for the Bears is a little bit of a minefield. It's the Rams, and then in some order, it's the Bengals and Browns. And like there's a path for the Bears to start. Like I think the Bears are a pretty good team. You know, I thought coming into the season they were a pretty good team outside of the quarterback position, which is obviously as important as it gets. There's a pretty clear path for that team to start like 0-2 or 1-2. And at that point, Justin Fields is definitely playing. It would be shocking to me if they get out to a 3-0 start when they're facing, you know, the Rams and the Bengals and the Browns. I don't think that's going to happen. So basically first loss of the season, I'm expecting to see, Justin.
So basically your comment on Matt Nagy is, to quote the ancient philosopher George Costanza, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Right. I'm like, what else is he going to say? I mean, I also don't think that they believe they would be in a position to even make a move for Justin Fields, right? Like, when they brought in Andy Dalton, I think they really legitimately thought, okay, we're stuck with this. This is what it's going to be. It's not great. Maybe he can land this plane and we still find a way to 9 or 10 wins, something like that. But I don't, like, they didn't sign him with any enthusiasm. And I don't think they saw a path to getting Trey Lance or Justin Fields or anyone like that. So they stumbled into it. It's great. I'm glad they still did it. But I do feel like they're locked into Andy Dalton at least for a week.
Similarly, do you feel the same way about Trey Lance in San Francisco, that it's Jimmy G to start and eventually Lance takes over there?
I won't say that I have my finger on the pulse of the Niners in the same way that I do, because, like, I'm on, you know, Bears message boards and stuff like that all the time, right? Like, I'm in the muck with meathead fans on where the Bears are concerned. I don't think that there's much to, a lot of this depends on what Trey Lance actually does during camp and what he does during preseason. Like, I think the Bears are pretty locked in on Andy Dalton week one regardless. I think Trey Lance probably has a better shot to play himself into week one than Fields does. And that's not, you know, I think the two are very similar in terms of projection for a full season. But I think the Niners are probably a lot more comfortable with what they have with Garoppolo. You know, for better or worse, right? Like, he's not, I mean, he's still the guy that missed the throw in that Super Bowl. And I don't think I think it'd be a disaster in all likelihood if he's quarterbacking the team at the end of the season. I think they want to get to Trey Lance. So I think it's a similar situation, but I would give Trey Lance a better shot at starting the opener.
Yeah, I think for fantasy, I think everybody approaches both situations the same way, where people are drafting Fields and Lance and not so much Dalton and Garoppolo.
Yeah.
With the anticipation that at some point both those guys are going to be starting. It's just it's more a matter of when, I think, than if for both of those guys. AJ Green was talking about how excited he is to be in Arizona, how he's so excited to play with DeAndre Hopkins, and, you know, how they can be so dangerous with, you know, him and Nuke and Christian Kirk, who I've pretty much let go of the rope on because I can't do it anymore. But do you have a belief that AJ Green is going to bounce back in Arizona? Is that hype? Is that smoke? Where you fall on that one?
Yeah, I gotta admit that I'd pretty much missed this hype until I saw your notes for the show, and I was like, wow, really, we're doing AJ Green again, huh?
I mean, are we? I don't know. That's the thing.
He, you know, I can, like, vintage AJ Green is obviously great, and that guy is not coming back, right? Like, I would hope that everybody can agree that we're just not going to get like 85 or 90 catches and 1,300 yards out of AJ Green or anything like that. And he had so, like, Burrow gave him so many good chances last year, I thought, like, chances to make the sort of highlight plays that AJ Green routinely made in his prime, put the ball on his hands, gave him opportunities for like tough catches in the end zone, but gave him chances, and he dropped most of them. Right? And I think he ended up with 40 some catches on 100 plus targets, which is obviously terrible, but he's been great. He's not so old that I would say, okay, you're done, you're cooked, you have to walk away from the game. I can see him stringing together a couple seasons that kind of look like what Emmanuel Sanders has done lately. I mean, he won't do it in exactly the same way, but, you know, can he settle into being like a 55 to 65 catch, you know, 750 yard receiver? I think he can. And if that has value in your league, then you can think about him. But like AJ Green's chances of hitting, you know, 1,100 yards, 1,200 yards, I think that's over.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't even know where to fall. I still love Nuke. I don't know that I love him where he's going in drafts, just because there are so many more weapons there. You know, and they're going to spread the football around. I have been sort of out on AJ Green. But I do think at the right spot, I do think, you know, and I guess that applies to everybody, but I definitely at the right spot in that offense. I do think there's something there. You know, maybe he slots in and kind of gives you a little bit more than what we've gotten out of Larry Fitzgerald the last few years in that offense too. So maybe that's kind of something to keep in mind. Sammy Watkins reportedly has been Baltimore's best receiver in training or in OTAs. Again, this is a positive OTA story, so maybe we take this with like a whole shaker of salt. But in a summer that has revolved around people being excited about Rashad Bateman and being optimistic about Marquise Brown, is it Sammy Watkins the guy that we should be paying attention to?
At some level, I feel like we should be paying attention to all of these guys. And I think there's a decent chance that, you know, Watkins, Bateman, Brown all finish relatively close to each other in terms of receptions and yards. Like that's not crazy to me. And that they end up only separated in fantasy terms by touchdowns. Like that's very much in play. And like, you know, I realize that Watkins has become a little bit of a punchline, but he's been a nice player. Like his career is going to end and we're going to look back and be like, that wasn't bad. I mean, he's been a 1,000-yard receiver. He's still only 28 years old. So he's not like, it feels like he's been around forever. It feels like we've lived our whole lives with Sammy Watkins, but he's not that old. And he used to actually do the Hollywood Brown stuff better than Brown has ever done it in the NFL. Like Sammy Watkins, you know, 6 years ago was a thing. Can he get back to being like, I don't think he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver for Baltimore. And I think it's going to be a very difficult, like, I think clearly safest way to invest in this offense is, or at least in this passing game is going to be Lamar. I think it's going to be a fun, you know, they're going to take a lot of deep shots, a lot of high yield opportunities and those can go to all three of these receivers. So yeah, I think he can have a good year. I hate to talk about everybody in the terms that they're going to all look like Emmanuel Sanders or something like that. But I think Watkins is another guy who can have one of those 700, 800 yard seasons if he stays healthy with a couple of, you know, splash plays along the way. I think that's very much in play. I love Lamar this season. I mean, we should love Lamar pretty much every season he's healthy. And I love Lamar right now. So like, yeah, in a way I can see Sammy Watkins finishing very close to the other two guys that we're really excited about. And he's clearly going to be the draft value, right? Like nobody's going to reach for Sammy Watkins in any round at any price. So he is definitely the guy that you can get in the last round who I think if you're in a deep league, you're in a spot that has many flexes, many open receiver spots, right? I think Sammy Watkins is going to be very much in play.
So I mean, I've given you a couple of, you know, quote unquote old wide receivers. So the fact that you compare them to Emmanuel Sanders, maybe not completely terrible.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, you talk about, you know, all three of these guys being bunched together in terms of production, which I think is certainly possible. My concern is that there's sort of a cap on their production just because of the nature of that passing game. Because even as much as, you know, Greg Roman and everybody there talks about wanting to have more balance and wanting to throw the football more, this is still going to be, I think, primarily a run-based offense. And now you're talking about spreading those targets between three wide receivers and a tight end because Mark Andrews is still going to get his. So, you know, I think that's sort of the asterisk on this for me is that they're all going to be kind of close, but they're all going to be sort of meh at the same time. That's why I can't get excited about Rashad Bateman. I watched him. I think he's super talented, super great, but I just think he is going to be sort of limited because that's just the nature of the offense he plays in.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally right. They're pretty clearly going to lead the NFL in rush attempts again, right? Because you have to with Lamar. Like it makes too much sense. I mean, Lamar has been a 6 yard per carry guy. He's, in my opinion, he's the, regardless of position, like there's not a running back that I think is more thrilling with the ball in his hands than Lamar Jackson. So like Lamar's got to run. He's given us 1,000 rushing yards in back-to-back years. And if he stays healthy, he's got to run. So I think there's almost no question they're going to be imbalanced in the direction of running the football. They should be. They're great at it. Nobody's this good at it. They can overwhelm teams. And I think we're going to be dependent on long touchdowns from all these guys, which is not an easy thing to bank on week to week, because like Andrews is the red zone guy and there's nobody else here who's just a prototypical red zone, you know, inside the 10 sort of receiver. So I think that's basically right. Like we're going to have a tough time guessing which Baltimore receiver is going to pop week to week.
So as you were talking, I just came up with a nickname for the wide receiver core. They're the best Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, shoot. I love that. It's great. You should trademark it right away.
I am. I'm going to put this out here.
You should make sure that that is associated with you and not don't let anybody steal that from it. That's really good.
All right. So now let's get to some either ors. I just put together some guys who are, you know, similar in their draft ADPs, maybe similar in production, but the guy that you would prefer to have over the other. So the first first one, let's say you're sitting at number three in your draft, right? Three or four. McCaffrey's gone. Dalvin Cook is gone. Say the number four, right? Derrick Henry's gone. Alvin Kamara or Saquon Barkley, which one would you rather and why?
Yeah, it's tough because they, you know, they both have some, like, each player has one obvious red flag, right? Mm-hmm. And with Kamara, it's what is the quarterback situation. With Barkley, it's what is the, you know, what is the health of his knee? And we're going to learn that as we get deeper into the summer. Like, again, right now, it's all sunshine, right? Like, Barkley's ahead of schedule. Everybody's ahead of schedule, and Barkley among them. They're all ahead of schedule. So assuming that's true, and we're drafting, like, for keeps, and it's August, and I feel pretty good about Saquon Barkley, I'm going to end up taking Saquon because he's the guy who, I mean, they can both reach 90 receptions. We've seen Saquon do it. We've seen Saquon have the 2000 scrimmage yard season. And I'm not so petrified of an ACL recovery that I don't think he can get back to being the player that he was. Shoot, if he's 98% of the player he was or 95% of the player he was like a mutant superhero level athlete, you know, a couple of years ago. So that's fine. It's probably going to be Barkley for me. I have so much quarterback anxiety regarding Kamara that I just can't get past it. We all remember that he was on pace to break the single season reception record for a running back last year. And then Taysom Hill entered the scene, and it was just, you know, that was over. It was, I want to say it was six targets, maybe seven targets in his first three games with Taysom Hill. Yep. So that's out there as a possibility. I don't believe that Jameis Winston ever wants to throw the ball to a running back. I'm sure he would if he's the quarterback, right? Like, I think he threw a bunch to Charles Sims way back in the day. But, like, the most recent version we've seen of Jameis is not terribly interested in throwing short. So I have a lot of anxiety about that situation. I mean, I think he can be great. I think he can give us, you know, another 1,400 yards, 1,500 yards. But I really worry that he's not going to hit that 80 catch threshold, and we need it because we know they're not going to give him 200 carries. They've never done it.
Yeah, that's the other part of that too. And I think the quarterback situation is the one thing that sort of colors a lot of how we feel about the Saints. I guess Michael Thomas seems like he's the only one who's sort of immune to this because he did okay last year when Taysom came on the field. They still found ways to get Thomas the ball. But my biggest fear, and I keep saying this, is that Sean Payton, who obviously hates our fantasy teams, who actively hates our fantasy teams, is going to go with sort of a two quarterback system where they, you know, they use Jameis sort of between the 20s and they use Taysom Hill when they get down near the end zone. You know, if they were willing to take Drew Brees off the field, why wouldn't they take Jameis Winston off the field? So that, you know, and that to me is the worst case scenario for everybody. Like, nobody wins in that situation there.
Yeah, really the fantasy wise, I feel like the best case scenario is probably Taysom, because if Taysom is the starting quarterback, then we're just going to get, it's just him. He's the only guy. But if Jameis is the starting quarterback, I mean, they're going to run Taysom out there all the time. And as you say, if they did it with Drew Brees, they are for sure doing it with Jameis Winston. And it's entirely possible that once they get inside the 10-yard line, it's going to be mostly Taysom. And that's just a fantasy nightmare.
Not going to lie, I have drafted Taysom late in some mocks just because. Just because. All right, a couple more running backs. Joe Mixon versus Chris Carson.
This is a good one because I feel like they're both so severely disrespected, and I see so many people talking about how they're going to run away from Joe Mixon, and they just can't get back on Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon's really good, and it doesn't always show up in the year end numbers or in the week to week numbers, but man, like, before Joe Burrow, 2 years ago, three seasons ago, it just seemed like a staple of Cincinnati's offense was to put Joe Mixon in impossible situations behind the line of scrimmage and see if he couldn't get 3 yards out of it. Right. And he always did because he's really good. And so, like, he'll have these years where you look at the, you know, you look at him in terms of efficiency and it's just over 4 yards per carry. These yards were miraculous, right? Like, almost everything Joe Mixon did, like, in 2018 and 2019 was a small miracle. I think he's really good. And I'm currently just really infatuated with the Bengals offense and where it's going to go, because they played so fast last year with a rookie quarterback. Like, while Burrow was healthy, they were right at the top of the league, top three in the league in terms of plays per game and pace. Burrow was throwing the ball 40 times a game. Like, it's just going to be a really fun offense if everything stays healthy and they can block it just a little bit. And so I think that sets up really well for Mixon. So, but I also think both of these guys can outproduce their draft position because, man, we're always talking about somebody behind Chris Carson on that depth chart, right? Whether it's Thomas Rawls or Precise or Rashad Penny or whoever, like, we're always infatuated with the next Seattle back. And then it's just always Chris Carson. So I think they're both really good players. I think an argument can be made for either one. I'm a little bit more interested in Joe Mixon right now.
All right. I'm a little bit more interested in Chris Carson because of, like, the disrespect that always happens and because of, like, the fact that he falls to the third round and everybody's like, yeah. I don't want Chris Carson because he didn't catch the football. And then when it's all said and done, he's given you RB2 returns. And, you know, you're not necessarily spending quite as much in draft capital to get him. I do like your point about Joe Mixon, though, having to be sort of superhuman. And that kind of maybe, yeah, when you just look at the numbers, it sort of takes away from it because you don't necessarily see how much effort goes into it. Although I will say the reports are that the Bengals are happy with Chris Evans. So now people have found that as a new reason to discount Joe Mixon. So maybe you'll get a better value on him if people were worried about Chris Evans.
I don't think there's another back on that roster that does anything as well as Joe Mixon does everything. So I'm not, like, you know, there was a week there where there was a different player note, like, every day about whether Joe Mixon would be involved on third down or not. Like, to me, that's just Joe Mixon's going to play as much as Joe Mixon can play, I think. And it's, if we want to worry about the foot injury from last season, that is a real thing. But competition in that depth chart, that just seems almost impossible to me.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think we're all scarred because we saw how much Gio would take. Like, it was not, there was nothing worse than you started Joe Mixon and then the Bengals are in hurry up mode and it's Gio Bernard out there, like, catching short passes. But maybe you're right. Maybe there is no easy replacement for Bernard in this roster. And that would make us all feel better. Just would. All right, in Dallas, Amari Cooper versus CD Lamb, which seems to be the big fantasy battle right now going on with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I don't want this to sound disrespectful to Amari Cooper, who I think is a really good player, and I'm comfortable drafting as a wide receiver too. But I mean, to me, CD Lamb is the guy who could actually end up at the back end of the first round next year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, CD Lamb is the guy who could vault into that top five wide receiver position for fantasy purposes, and, like, we'll reach October and we'll be like, oh my God, why weren't we drafting CD Lamb right next to Calvin Ridley and DK Metcalf? Like, I think he's that level talent, and obviously they're using him all over the formation. People probably don't need me to go through, like, what his on pace numbers were with Dak Prescott last year, but it was basically Justin Jefferson. He was going to have Justin Jefferson's season, perhaps with more touchdowns, right? I mean, I just think the ceiling for Lamb is higher. I think that kid is great, and I've tweeted about it before, and mostly what I tweet is just jokes and is just not like not to be taken seriously. But one thing you can take seriously is that I think I would actually draft CeeDee Lamb as my dynasty wide receiver one right now. Like, I see a path to a huge season this year. Wouldn't surprise me if he finishes with 1,400, 1,500 receiving yards, 10 touchdowns. Like, that's very much in play for Lamb, I think.
He's the guy that I said out of that rookie draft class had the highest overall ceiling. I liked Justin Jefferson as the rookie to kind of have in redraft leagues, but I thought CeeDee Lamb had the higher ceiling. And we saw it. I mean, the on-pace numbers were ridiculous before Dak got hurt. And so I think we sort of saw that. And now, I guess that's a piece of good news we are sort of taking to heart. The fact that they're going to move him around the formation and use him in different spots does seem exciting. And I'm sort of with you. Like, Amari Cooper, I think, is an excellent player. I also think his time in Dallas may be sort of short, which completely opens things up for Lamb to kind of be that guy in the next couple of years. So I'm with you on that one. All right, a DJ battle. DJ Moore versus DJ Chark. Which DJ is on the ones and twos for you?
Oh, man. But DJ Moore has been an 1,100-yard receiver with Kyle Allen and Teddy Bridgewater, which is really something. Like, DJ Moore has had nothing but I don't want to say trash quarterbacks, but kind of trash quarterbacks, right? Like, his going back to college, like, it was, you know, his final year at Maryland, it was just a parade of guys who should not have been playing the position. And he's been, like, he's great with everybody. So that's a really long kind of mean-spirited way of saying that Sam Darnold doesn't rattle me. Like this is maybe the best quarterback situation that he's had in his entire life, and it's Sam Darnold. So I don't worry about that at all. I think DJ Moore, you can pencil in, you know, another 1,100 yards, and maybe there's a little bit of touchdown luck here. Maybe, you know, it'd be great if we saw DJ Moore a little bit more involved in red zone work. But a reasonable projection for DJ Moore is like 1,100 yards, 1,200 yards, 4 to 6 touchdowns, something like that. I think he's very safe. I think DJ Chark is the guy that has the much wider range of outcomes. And there's been a little bit of Chark slander out there, right? Like just maybe this is just fantasy football Twitter and it doesn't trickle out to the rest of the world. But I feel like people prefer Chenault. They might prefer Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones has been a really good player. Like as you look at that receiving core, I feel like people are less excited about Chark, but he was a wide receiver one just 2 years ago until they hit late in the season. He had that ankle injury and he played through it. And sometimes the worst thing that a player can do in terms of like public perception is play through an injury. Cause then we're like, oh, what happened to Chark? He must have been not as good as we thought he was, but he was playing hurt and he wasn't great in December of 2019, but he'd been so dominant the rest of the year. He's also like, even in the NFL, there's not a whole bunch of guys out there that are like 6'4 with 4.3 speed. So he has the physical traits that almost no one else does. So this is one of those situations where like, again, if I'm in some huge sprawling league, it's a deep league. I got 3 receiver spots to fill. I've got all these bench spots or all these flex spots to fill. I might feel more comfortable with DJ Moore because I feel like that's a pretty rock solid projection on him. I know I'm getting 1,100 yards. I feel really confident in him. Chark to me is the guy that, you know, there's maybe a 3% chance, 5% chance that he just goes supernova and has like a 1,500 yard year. There's a lot more variables with that offense. We, you know, it's new coaching staff, new quarterback, new everything. A little part of me thinks he has the kind of star potential that Moore does not. So, man, I'm giving you a really long answer here. If I'm just looking for a guy that I think has bankable stats, it's Moore. But if I've started my draft with like Tyreek Hill and Chris Godwin, and I already feel like I'm stacked at receiver, mm-hmm. then I feel like I'd probably take a shot with Chark because his upside is unlike a lot of others.
All right. I will say this. I am an unabashed LaVisca Chenault stan. I have been from the beginning. I have doubled down this year. So, you know, and it's look, it's not because I know on Twitter there's like it's an either or, like you don't really get to have nuance. And so like because I'm a Chenault stan, that means I'm automatically a Chark hater. But I can tell you that that's not the case. I like DJ Chark. I just like Chenault more. The other thing is, so are you in on the Sam Darnold resurrection tour? Do you think this happens in Carolina for him?
I have drafted my way into a position where I have to say yes. I've ended up with Sam Darnold, somewhat unintentionally in a couple of, best ball dynasty startups. So I guess that's an endorsement. I mean, I was speaking earlier about how like you really learn who you like and who you don't like by your draft behavior. And based on that, I have to say that I'm a little bit in. I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I like, can Sam Darnold reach 4,000 yards in a 17 game season with these receivers and this coaching staff and that running back? Like, that can happen. It's not going to be pretty. Like, I don't know that it's going to be a quarterback clinic or anything like that, but I think the raw numbers can be there. So in a super flex sort of hedgy way, yes, I suppose I'm in on Sam Darnold. I certainly think that he can support, you know, both Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore as viable fantasy receivers.
I mean, according to Robbie Anderson, he's got a different aura about him now when he walks in the building. So, take that for what it's worth. All right. Last one, a couple quarterbacks. Matthew Stafford versus Ryan Tannehill.
I'm in on both. I've already drafted them both. So I don't have like negative things to say about anybody here. Mm. Stafford is the guy who, you know, coming off thumb surgery, had like a medley of injuries last year, right? I think it was ribs. There may have been an ankle. There may have been an elbow. There was a thumb. Like you've got some injury worries there that he probably still needs to address in some form this offseason, right? Like we need to see him fully healthy, fully functional and all that. I'm going to lean Tannehill here. If they're both on the board and I need a quarterback, I'm going to go with Tannehill. He's on one of the few teams that actually has a better, you know, number one and number two receiver than the Rams do. So I like that. And Stafford, just like the last time Stafford, I believe the last time he ran for a touchdown was 2016. and Tannehill ran for 7 last year. And that's obviously that's a little fluky. He's probably not going to get there again this year. But one thing that is consistent with Ryan Tannehill is he'll run for 200 plus yards and he'll probably run for 3 to 5 touchdowns. Like, so that's a gap that Stafford has to close on the strength of his arm, and he might be able to do it. He could probably do it. He's a you know, huge talent, all that. But I feel a little bit more comfortable with Ryan Tannehill. I love that offense. It's not like the Titans have this lockdown defense or anything like that. So they're going to be passing. Like, I don't feel like it's just going to be entirely the Derrick Henry show this year. Obviously he's a miracle worker off play action. I'm pretty excited about Tannehill this year. So slightest edge to Tannehill for me.
All right. You are correct. 2016 was Matthew Stafford's last rushing touchdown. Yeah. He had 2 that year with the Lions. Are we done with the Ryan Tannehill? I won't say slander, but I feel like, you know, fantasy people have generally been sort of apprehensive about Ryan Tannehill. And I feel like, you know, it took a while for him to sort of, you know, wash the Miami stink off of him. Yeah. Do you think we're past that now? Do you think Julio Jones helps get him over the hump that now we're all on board with Tannehill?
Man, if you weren't on board a couple years ago when he had that miraculous close to the season, I mean, and then what did he do last year? It was 30 touchdowns. It was 7 rushing touchdowns. Like, if you're not on board after the year and a half that we've seen from Tannehill, maybe you'll never be. I don't know what it'll take. He wasn't even like, he had some pretty good spots in Miami too. Like, it wasn't a total face plant for him in Miami, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he was in that streaming discussion more weeks than not. So right. I'm certainly in on Tannehill. I don't know if the entire community is, and that he's probably not going to get the pass volume that Stafford will. And we may not feel as comfortable in the coaching situation as we do with the Rams, but man, that guy couldn't have done more over the last year and a half to set aside any concerns that you may have had about him early in his career.
I mean, I agree. I shouldn't say the stink of Miami. He was, you know, he was average in Miami. Definitely was not a stud, but, you know, he wasn't, you know, completely, as you said, it was not a face plant there. But I just feel like, you know, people look at him and think, yeah, what he did was good. And I have felt just sort of this apprehension that people weren't totally all in, but I feel like that's changing now. Like, you know, it's amazing what getting a guy like Julio Jones can do
right
for your offense. But I feel like
the one thing about his 2019 season is it was almost too good, right? Like, you were like, he was the most screaming regression candidate that you could possibly come up with, because like he was like 10 yards per attempt or so, over 9 yards per attempt, just ridiculous rate stats that we'd never seen from Ryan Tannehill. It all seemed like a house of cards that was going to crumble. And then, right. And then he backed it up. Like, last year was a really solid consolidation year, I thought, for him. So even if you thought it was all just going to go to, you know, it was all smoke and mirrors 2 years ago, I think last year really allayed a lot of those concerns.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, all right, before I let you go, I like to do just some rapid fire, general fun, non-fantasy topics. But you are a Chicago guy. Your top 3 hot dog toppings.
I am, man, I don't have a lot of good things to say about hot dogs. And I'm not like... I'm not like some super healthy eater, right? Like, I will enjoy some not good for you food. Like, you give me a plate of wings, I'm all over the plate of wings. Like, I'm not that guy. But man, I mean, what are hot dogs? Are like entrails and sawdust, right?
I mean,
like,
they're delicious.
They are delicious largely because of the toppings, in my opinion. And so you want the highest possible ratio of toppings to hot dog, I think. So like, let's put a whole Caesar salad on there. Let's put it in a bread bowl. let's put some French toast on that. But like, anything you do to a hot dog is gonna make the experience better and is gonna make it healthier for you. So like, there's nothing that can't go on a hot dog, in my opinion. I am not one of those like, don't let ketchup touch a hot dog. There's nothing you can do to a hot dog that doesn't make it better. You gotta drown that thing. When I think of the traditional toppings on a Chicago hot dog, though, mm-hmm. the favorites I don't even know what to call those tiny little peppers that look like they might be radioactive. Right, those are really good.
Okay.
They give it a nice kick.
Little peppers. Yeah.
Yeah. The also radioactive looking relish gives it a nice little, there's a nice texture to that I like. And then put all of the tomato wedges on there. Like, I think there's usually like 3 or 4 tomato wedges on there. I need those on there too. I don't always like the pickle. But again, going back to my rule of you can put anything on a hot dog and make it better, like the pickle's fine as well.
All right. I really didn't know I was going to spark such a reaction by asking about hot dog toppings. But I'm glad we've gone down this
road. I feel like I have a problematic take on hot dogs. There used to be a place called Hot Dugs that was like a weird location, but it would get this hour-long line at lunch, right? And that guy was like a genius with encased meat, and it was super high quality. And I used to like his stuff a lot. And now that that's out of my life, and it's just nothing but the standard issue Vienna hot dogs, I'm generally out. Unless you're a child. If you're a child, they're fine.
Next time you come to LA, we'll go to Pink's, and we'll see if we can rekindle a love of hot dogs for you. So that's all I'm saying.
I'm willing to hit that. Yeah.
All right. So in honor of there was a reporter who lost in fantasy football and had to spend 24 hours in a Waffle House, and he live tweeted his whole experience, which I think he polished off 7 waffles to cut down his time. Is there a restaurant chain you would be willing to spend 24 consecutive hours in?
I feel I could do 24 hours straight in almost any diner in America. Like all the way down to Denny's quality, I feel like I could hit. I don't know what all of my diner chains are, but I feel like I could do that. Like, I'm really at home there. We used to have in high school, like at the end of a long weekend evening, we would always hit this place called Wags. It was called Wags, and it was maybe in Carroll Stream, Illinois. And we would just always end our nights there at like 2 a.m. And like, you're seeing the worst of humanity at most diners at 2 a.m., right? But I was comfortable there. They had some delicious breakfast entrees that you could knock back at 2 a.m. unlimited coffee. Like, I feel like I could probably do 48 hours in most diners, honestly.
Wow. Wow, that's
not to brag or anything, but I feel like 48 hours.
Look, I have an unhealthy fascination with Waffle House because, I grew up in California and we don't have them. So whenever I go to a place that has them, like, I make it a point to eat there. So I felt like 24 hours in a Waffle House would be fun. But like, watching this guy agonize over his 24 hours and stare literally into the waffle void made me sort of rethink my life. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I could really enjoy 2 waffles, but like, once you like, I understand the idea that if I just eat 9 of these things, then I'm hey, that's taking a lot of hours off my day. But man, by that 4th or 5th waffle, that can't be easy.
No, you really are rethinking life decisions at that point. All right, last one for you, because you are the fantasy judge. Do you have any tips for powdered wig maintenance?
I'm strictly redraft with my wigs. I get a fresh one every year. I don't do dynasty wigs. So there's nothing to maintain. I go to my local costume shop and I get a totally fresh, new to me wig every year. I don't brush that thing out. It has to, it's going to have a hard 4 months or so riding in my backpack. It travels with me throughout the football season, because you never know when you have to throw the wig on to settle a dispute. And once I have the wig on, then I have the full authority of fantasy law. So, yeah, but I don't really maintain that thing at all. And then at the end of the season, I retire it.
That's amazing. Do you have like a shelf, or do they just get where you just like hang them up like on some head forms, or do they just unceremoniously get sent out with it?
Yeah, I'm not sentimental with many things, and certainly not with my wigs. They just get disposed of. Who knows what happens to them? I mean, they could be out there in some recycled form somewhere, but I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe you should send them off to like they do with the championship shirts of teams that don't actually win championships. Like, you could send them off to somewhere, and maybe some child will grow up wanting to be a fantasy judge because of
it. I'll look into it. It's a great idea.
There you go. Andy, I always enjoy talking to you. You always make me laugh. It's always a fun time. I would think that people who listen to this show know where to find you, but for those who are uninitiated, where can they find your stuff?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm just at Andy Behrens. I don't make it difficult for you. And then, check out our content on Yahoo Sports. Check out the podcast, too, the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. That's always a good time. This has been great. It's been really nice catching up with you, talking to you. I'm really looking forward to the Kings Classic this year and the expo and all that. So I hope people hit that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be nice to get back in person after obviously having to do it virtually last year. B-Dubs needs us. They need our
I know. I hope that thing has survived because we can prop it up for another year.
For another year. With just our evening of banter and mirth and enjoyment. So, go check out Andy if you haven't already. It's always good stuff. Check out him and a lot of our pals over on the Yahoo side as well. In the meantime, for us, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, do Transformers get car insurance or life insurance? Be safe, take care of yourselves, get vaccinated, and we'll see you next week.